This is OTB AM.
If you were to have to pick a combination to win, let's say it was a Lions test, which combination would it be?
It would be Murray Sexton.
Of Carberry and Murray, or Sexton and Gibson Park?
Yeah, it would be Murray and Sexton.
But if you couldn't, if either the Munster partnership or the Leinster one. Not making it that easy for you.
You're not getting an answer, Adrian, enough, because it's a nonsense question.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio.
Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
It's 23 minutes past 8 this morning here on OTB AM. You're very welcome. If you've just joined us, you've missed a brilliant interview with Mark Lawrence, and we've talked about a lot of things there, and we've loads more to come on the show between now and 10 o'clock as well. But we want to turn our attention to rugby, and in particular Ireland Six Nations game against France at the weekend. Before we do that, we want to talk a little bit about Simon Zeebo. Louise Galvin is with us, and we just want to play everybody this video. It's Marissa Reedy shared this on Twitter yesterday. It's one of Zeebo's biggest fans. Hearing the news delivered by our own Stephen Doyle that he is indeed coming back to Munster and hopefully Ireland.
The Emirates has never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Afternoon, I'm Stephen Doyle. It's been confirmed Simon Zeebo has signed a one-year deal to return to play with Munster next.
Oh my God, no way!
He says
yes!
A co-funded contract. It seems him return.
Yay, I'm so excited!
He'll now be eligible to play for Ireland again ahead of the 2023 World Cup. Ilkay Gundogan.
Yeah, so I presume that was the general reaction from a lot of Munster fans yesterday. Simon Zeebo, by the way, has offered to bring mother and daughter to whatever game they want to, free of charge at any point over the next season. So that's all worked out very well for everybody.
Yeah, Marissa, I know Nora and her daughter would be delighted to have gotten that shout out and off the ball as well. And they're huge fans of Simon Zeebo, and I know he's been very hospitable to them in the past when he's been at Munster and at Racing. But yeah, I think that's generally sums up the reaction of Munster fans, certainly. And I think the interesting thing is that the RFU are part funding the contract. So are we going to see Simon Zeebo in an Irish jersey again? That's the real, I suppose, exciting question for not only Munster fans, but Irish fans in general.
Yeah, I really hope so. I mean, I saw some people poo-pooing this. I'm like, what is wrong with people? I mean, Zeebo has exactly the type of X factor. He's also a brilliant marketing tool. Like, you know, he's genuinely one of the most interesting rugby players that we've produced over the last decade or so. And the worst that'll happen is that he'll push all of the wingers to be better than they are at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. They get their tails up a bit. And we all know we've all been waxing lyrically about Hugo Keenan at full back. But the thing is, where's the depth? So do we know who our second best fullback is? And as much as Hugo has a brilliant work ethic and he's doing really well, if he hits injury, if he hits his lump in form and feels no one's really pushing him for that 15 jersey, well, now certainly he is. You know, his eyebrows will be raised a little bit at Zeebo returning and the RFU pushing it. So if all it adds to is competition, then it's obviously going to be a positive and a plus. And certainly for Munster, I think they definitely need that. I mean, if Zeebo isn't going to be involved with the Irish squad, even to have him there week in, week out, to try and maybe bring back a little bit of what he's learned in France, and that kind of style of jouer, jouer might, you know, I'm sure Stephen Larkham's looking forward to having him back into that back line.
Yeah, I mean, famously, of course, Johan van Grant didn't pick him for a big European game, picked Alex Wootton ahead of him, and then ended up bringing Zeebo on, and that was just at the end of his last career, last period at Munster. So that'll be an interesting first conversation that the lads have, which I presume they'll get over pretty quickly.
Yeah, and that's a few years ago. He's had three pretty successful seasons in Racing now. He's been generally picked week in, week out, and playing with some superstars there within the squad. So I don't think, you know, I think that'll be water under the bridge when he comes back in. There might be a little bit of a joke about it initially. You know, it would be a bit of a joke, but no, I think Zeebo is going to be very excited. He's got a family there with him as well. He always, you know, if you follow his social media, he's always talking about Cork and Munster and coming back home again. So I'm sure it's not just a brilliant move for him, but for his family as well. And kind of like, you know, the opposite of CJ Stander, we have to look at these players not only as players and where they play, but holistically, you know, a happy player off the pitch and a happy wife, happy life, happy family. They have to keep them all content. And certainly he's always speaking about his life at home. So I think, you know, it's the right time for him. He's 31 to come back and still be offer a lot and contribute a lot to this Munster squad.
And what we just saw in that video, that sort of stuff kind of matters as well, Louise, the way he has an ability to excite younger viewers to Munster rugby. You don't want to like overstate it that he can attract new fans to the sport or anything like that, but he's a fan favourite amongst a whole cohort of people.
Yeah, and I guess, look, nowadays, we all know it. Everyone is so media trained. Zeebo is one of those rare lights that he is who he is, and you follow him for that bit of, I suppose, authenticity, and that, you know, he is his own identity. And that's really refreshing. And I think that's why he engages with a lot of the fans that way. And if you don't like it, then you can just tune out. That's fine. But we're so used to players being so media trained, and that's for a reason as well. A lot of them don't want to engage with that side of things. But Zeebo is the opposite, and that makes him, you know, star quality off the pitch as well as on it.
I guess if Zeebo comes back and plays for Ireland and plays well for Ireland, it almost rubber stamps David Nusepour's policy on players playing abroad, that, you know, you can do your time away from Ireland, but if you want to play for Ireland, you've got to come back, and maybe you'll come back a better player, but still, we're not picking you until you come back.
Yeah, look, for what Nusepour is trying to do there, he's obviously trying to protect the club game. He's trying to protect the youth in that they stay in Ireland and come up through the structures here. So that would be a suggestion that if he was to come back and play well, that, oh, this is done well, you know, he's gone away, he's brought something back. But at the same time, you could turn around and say, well, maybe in 2020, in 2019, when Rob Kearney was finishing his career, that we were lacking a 15 and we wouldn't look at Zeebo because he was in France. And why can't we maybe use these players when they are playing abroad and in the thick of a completely different structure and system? So I think it would offer both arguments, really, Owen.
I'm with you, Louise. I think that if Zeebo comes back and tears up trees, we'll be like, why the hell did this guy not play for Ireland when we needed him? No?
Yeah, well, when he was 28 and 29,
yeah.
And even
yeah,
maybe more in his physical prime. But again, you know, this is the structure that we have and the players know about it. And there's only the odd outlier that that gets away with it. And, you know, Dunnock Ryan is another player that when he went to Racing, I think he was underrated how important he was to that Irish setup. We didn't, you know, we weren't as blessed at the time with second rows as we are now. You know, it's probably not as missed now, but certainly when he left initially, I think he was a lot bigger for Ireland of a loss than people probably perceived.
I don't think that you can make the case that either Ryan or Zeebo weren't missed at the World Cup. I think they both absolutely were. And combined, putting them both in the squad, I think would have had an impact at least. But Owen's just a shill for the IRFU, it turns out, these days. Louise, let's talk about Ireland and the game against France this weekend. The performance last week was exemplary. I mean, the second half, probably they tailed off. But that's what happens when you're 40-odd points up and you're so dominant physically, tactically, at the set piece. It was a kind of massive coming out party in terms of the reputation of that team, because we haven't seen them essentially for 2 years at this point properly, and also haven't seen them playing good weather for a very long period of time. So this was a chance for us to kind of to see what the team is trying to do, and they're a really, really exciting team.
Yeah, it was really exciting. Really, really enjoyed the game. I think there's a few contributing factors. Like, obviously, they had a huge amount of time together because games kept getting postponed or cancelled. So they used that opportunity, obviously, to focus and to hammer home exactly what they wanted to do in a defence and attack. You mentioned the weather. It was a 4G pitch, so it allowed them to get that go-wide ball. Or get that go-forward ball and then hit out wide. We know they have a lot of talent out in the wings, but in previous years, we haven't really gotten to grips with giving our backline really good ball. Wales weren't great. You know, I think we can all admit that they had very poor initially, very poor line speed. I mean, we were getting the ball to our wingers, our open wingers' hands off first phase set piece, which France won't let us do this weekend unless we were playing with an incredible amount of depth. And on top of that, you know, I think an interesting thing is having Hannah at 10. I think she played really well, but Hannah's played all of her 15s rugby up until the last two caps in the as a fullback and as a winger. So she knows that feeling of being on, being completely open out in the tram lines and it not coming out. And I know normally tens are aware of this, but when you're in that position and you see it for so long, and she knows the talent that we have out there, that crossfield kick, I mean, in fairness to go for that, we weren't at penalty advantage. Okay, we were pretty comfortable in the game and we'd already had maybe two tries 10 minutes in. But to go for that when it's not penalty advantage, that's someone who A, backs her skills and knows she has it, and B, backs her back three, because both Emer and Bavin were lining up to convert that score. There's not too many tens that will go for that, not on penalty advantage. So fair play to her. And I think the fact that she has that back three experience and knows that when it's on, it's on, is another reason why we got ball wide so early. But we're going to see a completely different game, I think, this weekend. We're not going to have so much time in the ball. France is going to be a lot more physical and have a lot more line speed.
Looking back at recent results against France, they've beaten us pretty handily in the last three or four times that we've played them, all the way back to 2018. Obviously, we didn't play them last year, and so it's hard to know exactly where we are versus where they are. They have a kind of semi-pro approach to the women's international team. We're a little bit behind that at the moment. So obviously, some of our players are sevens crossovers too. So, like, what should we expect? What's realistic this weekend?
Yeah, and even to back up, France are semi-pro, but their club structure is very strong. It would be a lot stronger than what we have here in AIL. So when they're not with the national squad, they're with I suppose quite a good setup as well. It's going to be a very difficult game, but the sound bites coming out of the squad is that they're really talking themselves up in a good way. We're not beaten before we take to the field at all, and there's certainly a lot of speak of even trying to make Donnybrook a fortress. So I'm expecting a really tight game, but to be disappointed with the loss wouldn't be very wouldn't be right either, because France at the moment, looking at our where we are, different trajectories, they are doing quite well. We've had a really good performance against Wales, but a poor enough Welsh team that are having their own issues, their own problems at the moment. It's hard. You can only beat what's put in front of you, but it's hard to really gauge yourself off the best until it comes to this weekend. I think a few things going in our favour is obviously being at home. The fact that it's on a 4G surface again means that we can play that type of expansive game that we played last week, but also France can play that way, and we know they love to jouer. I think we're more of a settled team, so initially France would have included some of their sevens players in their Six Nations squad, but then they had a tournament in Dubai 2-3 weeks ago, so they have reintroduced four players since the Welsh game. So where they slot in, plus even in that Welsh game they didn't start a lot of their experienced players, like Marjorie Mayen, Safi Ndiaye, they were on the bench, Jesse Chumulier. So are we going to see a whole change compared to that team that took the field against Wales, which for them could be a negative? They're not as settled. I expect our girls, having played last week, we didn't pick up too many injuries. I expect us to be a bit more of a settled outfit taken to the field. So there's a lot there to suggest this is going to be a really close game, but we can't play that expansive rugby until we win the set piece and until we win the physicality battle up front. And that's going to be really, really tough.
I guess the optimistic outlook going into last weekend, Louise, was that with all the time off, Ireland had managed to fine-tune a few things, maybe in the set piece, that could have looked a little bit better as a result of having a lot of time off. And it did against Wales, even though you're not coming up against as good opposition as you are this weekend. Is your sense that you can take real things from last weekend when it comes to the set piece, that they have used all that training time, all that time off, to actually improve tangibly in that area?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, again, we know Wales weren't really at the races, but to see the scrum, how dominant it was, driving over there, put in, to see the line out function so well, and, you know, Cliona Maloney hitting the tail plenty of occasions, and how even beyond the line out itself, how we use some nice, like, hitting Junior in the middle of the field, tip on to Dorothy Wall, some massive carry in second phase. We're playing open in the back line, we're getting really good front football. It's not just the actual set piece of the line out itself, but how the team I suppose plays off of that good platform. It's really encouraging. They've certainly used the time to focus, and I think there's a real sense as well of I suppose community and togetherness within the squad. I think it's really palpable, both from the girls, from the way they're playing, but also just the you know, picking at the little sound bites coming out of camp, talking to the girls. It sounds like they're a really, really unified squad. There's a lot of people pushing for places. There's a lot of players who didn't even play, weren't on the 23, who you'd be quite happy to see them take the field. So all in all, we're in a really good place, and you can just feel the excitement for the game this weekend. But we'll know a lot more after this weekend about where the girls are really at.
On a macro level, the opportunity that this team has now to capture the country's imagination with the star power of a teenager scoring tries and kind of having that impact on TV that loads of people are watching, you know, the comparisons with O'Driscoll and the hat-trick in Paris, that kind of stuff, people are making those. And it's you know, I understand why people are making them. The difference between where this team is versus their competition is going to be very important over the next couple of years, so that we don't completely lose touch with the fully professional setup in England. With COVID, we've already seen there's job losses in the IRFU, and they're battening down the hatches to try and survive this very difficult period. What do you hope in terms of the IRFU's investment in the women's team at the moment, and what is that the size of the opportunity in your view at the moment?
Yeah, look, at the moment, the girls are elite amateurs. They put in an awful lot of time. And in fairness, when they get access to high performance camp, everything from that point of view is spot on. But at the end of the day, they have to go back. They have to do their day job. They're not getting that rest time and recovery. It is very difficult to look for and to be looking for, I suppose, any extra money when you see people losing their job within the RFU. I take that 100% to hand. But if the long-term strategy and the long-term goal is that we want the Irish women's squad, you know, not only just qualifying for World Cups, but competing for medals at World Cups, for competing for Six Nations Championships, then this has to be in the offing down the road. It's a difficult conversation. I know from the seven squad, it's not a huge, you're not on huge money at all. It's I'm not sure if you'd even call it livable. And usually with the sevens players, they tend to be younger age profiles. So a lot of them are coming out of college, whereas your 15th players, you know, the likes of Bavin Parsons, Dorothy Wall aside, who are now in the sevens program as well, you're talking about paying mortgages and that. So there's a whole lot of, it's just a huge headache. But to stay in touch, not only, you know, from, if we want to be the best of the rest, fine, stay with the way we are. But if we actually really want to compete, if we want to grow the game, I know the Irish, the IRFU, they're talking about trying to get more players playing, and that's the main point of their women's strategy. But a huge point of that is visibility of girls actually within the squad, performing, playing full time, of that being a goal that they could potentially be that person as well someday. So there has to be some sort of a long-term strategy post-COVID that we get off the ground and we get as some sort of a professionalism or semi-professionalism, and whether that involves, you know, even like in the Premier 15s, they use a lot of companies to try and support players in the English club scene. Like whether we look at that sort of a player being supported by a private company and then offering something back to that private company, as well as being on a kind of a baseline RFU contract.
Yeah.
I mean, there's different ways of looking at it besides the RFU just handing over a whole ball of money. But it has to come down the line if we want to win Six Nations Championships and if we want to really compete at World Cups.
Well, there'll be a public clamour for it if they keep playing the way they are, and that's them holding up their side of the bargain, and we hope that the IRFU and indeed big sponsors get behind them and support them as individuals and then as the team as well. Louise, always great to talk to you. Thanks a million for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.